Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Roll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Ethan Sherwood Strauss. A late podcast today, but a podcast nonetheless.
Right around after I wake up as an NBA blogger, you know, so it works. You know, you wake up at around 2 p.m., you roll out of bed, you get to work, you put on your tie, you know, you go right after it.
I was going to take a nap today and then just didn't. And I've realized that I'm not a good blogger in the sense that I don't sleep.
Yeah.
And I thought, like, we are supposed to sleep most of the day.
I just realized that I was agreeing with you on the sleep part, but it sounded like I was agreeing with you when you said you're not a good blogger. Just get a quick yes.
Yep, that's confirmed.
It is true. Sleep is quite important, and I found it's my new favorite way to justify and rationalize being lazy is, oh, it's just for my health, you know? I gotta take this nap right now. There's no other way.
Yeah, I get so caught up, and I know this will mean nothing to you, but I've gone from movies to, like, baseball season. Like, baseball season started, and they're day games, and I'm like,
oh, wait, they play the day?
Yeah, they do. They play when the sun's out. And I just looked at it, and I'm like, I could watch a baseball game while I write, and then I just end up watching a baseball game and not writing.
What? So you find it so captivating that it's hard to do another activity?
Yeah, well, I really like baseball.
Oh, man. I can't even relate. I mean, I know that people say that going to a game, you need to go to a game. It's not the same as watching on TV. If you go to a game, then you really experience it. I feel like, you know, in movies where somebody's worst fear is used against them in some sort of torture scene where they're surrounded by rats crawling around their legs,
yes.
That's how I feel when I'm at a baseball game. I have such a low attention span. I can't change the channel. I'm like pantomiming the channel change during the dead moments, and I just can't, and I'm just trapped in my seat, and there's nothing to do, and I go crazy, Zach. It's just not for me. I don't know why.
Well, that's why you have Twitter.
Oh, yeah, that's why.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe I should go back. Now that I have Twitter, maybe it'll be a much better experience.
No, I don't get that. I love baseball, and I love going to baseball games, but I would never tell someone, oh, you have to go. You have to go to a game to really experience it. No, it's about the same, only you pay, like, $9 less for a beer if you stay home.
Yeah, well, a lot of that is – a lot of that is just people projecting what they like and thinking that the other person will just like it. It's a very narcissistic point of view.
Target Field apparently has a Bloody Mary now where as, like, the – you know, they always have that, like, accoutrement stick of, like, cheese and, I don't know, an olive and a pickle and, like, some kind of meat to go with a Bloody Mary. They have a slider.
A slider?
On that stick now.
What?
I have no idea how much is Bloody – I don't even like Bloody Marys, but I may order one just to get the slider.
That is disgusting. That's unbelievable.
Well, it's not in the drink. It's above the drink. It's above the water line. Not water
yeah,
line.
But
liquid
it's
line.
It's not an olive. It's a slider.
Well, it's got everything else.
It's like they're making fun of Midwesterners only
– Yes, that's what arena food is in the Midwest. It's just like, hey, fatso, come over here and try this.
It's just a big old brat instead of an olive in the martini. Oh, man, they're trying to kill you all.
Yeah, speaking of bloody, the Spurs have been laying a bloody mess behind them with their 19-game winning streak. Although by the time people are listening to this, they may be working on losing that 19-game
winning streak. The old Thunder matchup that makes them rethink all the angles that they know.
Well, I feel like Pop doesn't care about the Thursday night games.
Nah, he prefers losing them, and you can tell that he hates this win streak too. That it just gets under his skin, and it's going to encourage complacency. Zach, you can't have that.
No, you can't have that at all. You can't expect to win.
Yeah,
you have to strive for it.
He's probably sabotaging his team as we speak. He's thinking up ways to undermine them to make them work harder next time they go up against the Thunder.
He probably sent them out all out to, like, whatever club is in, whatever hot place is in Oklahoma City last night. And told them to live it up so that they can, quote-unquote, have food poisoning today? Can we just stop calling food poisoning that and just say that they're hungover?
Yeah, that would be a better shift, you know. That would be a better shift than also flu-like symptoms that
right.
They use sometimes with basketball players who miss games. He's probably hiring some hot lady at the clubs to send Boris Diaw some of these Bloody Marys with the slider on top.
Oklahoma City, they probably just have a steak, right? Just like a 9-ounce steak.
he's giving her instructions. Like, okay, so you're going to order a drink, and you're also going to take an elongated toothpick and stab a steak and combine the two. Send it to Boris.
That seems like a plan. Has this winning streak changed your mind about the Spurs?
I don't know what there was to change. That's what's so that's that's what's so interesting and uninteresting about them is their continuity and how I here's the thing. They seemed a little vulnerable earlier in the season when their bench was dramatically outplaying their starting lineup, and that seemed to be a bit of a concern. I know that people also were worried about how they weren't beating good teams. That wasn't a fear of mine. That to me, that all evens out, and if you have a great point differential, it will reveal itself. I don't really believe in the idea that if you're not beating good teams, then that's somehow a vulnerability, and that's going to show itself later. So there's more reason to be confident in them, certainly, with Kawhi Leonard playing. He makes them a lot better. He might be their most important player. And
ooh, I disagree there.
You disagree?
I very much disagree.
Could be Parker, too. I mean,
I disagree again.
So much disagreement. Really? So you're going to go Duncan?
Disagree a third time.
No. Oh, come on.
Manu.
Really?
Manu is absolutely their most important player.
Not anymore. Yes. Not now that they have Marco and they have Boris Diaw and they can fill that.
No, that nobody can fill that. Marco can't fill that role. Nobody else can fill that role. You can fill in the regular season. Postseason time, they need Manu.
My counter argument would be that they nearly won an NBA Finals series with Manu Ginobili absolutely melting down.
After he had two really good games.
He had one really good game.
No, his game 7 was quite good, I believe, if I remember correctly.
His game 7? Yeah, I guess it got clouded in my mind by him jumping in the air and handing the ball to LeBron James. that kind of
yeah, that wasn't a great moment.
But really, that sort of action and the positive result of it is pure Manu Ginobili. I often wonder if anybody before him jumped out of bounds while throwing that pass to the corner three, especially the way he does on the baseline hammer sets. I sometimes wonder, did he just invent that? Because nobody would have thought to do it. Nobody would have thought,
what are you doing?
Taking a sprinting flying leap out of bounds is my best angle on this pass, and then Manu did it. And he's just such a creative player. I love him. He's my favorite Spurs player. I just don't know that this juncture he's that guy.
He's been pretty good this year.
Oh, he's been great this year. He's had a great Manu year. I just would argue that Kawhi is more important. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I disagree.
Kawhi is like the Ed Reed of basketball.
Okay.
Yeah, throwing that out there.
What's Manu then?
Manu
is he Joe Flacco? Like...
the Flacco? We're drawing from the same team that doesn't exist anymore.
You're putting these football characterizations on teammates.
Mm-hmm.
I figured it was only right. I mean, he's not the Ray Lewis.
Well, I think about the Ed Reed just with Kawhi's preternatural ability to cut off passing angles and get interceptions as a safety. So you have to give Manu more of an offensive role. He's more of a Steve Young type. Someone who's ultra creative and will be inventive, maybe a Johnny Manziel if we're going modern. That's Manu.
Oh, you're high on the Manziel.
Well,
high on the Johnny football.
Yeah,
that's good.
Just somebody who does things you wouldn't think to do.
I'm surprised too, because I figured you would be such an anti-short quarterback guy.
Not really. I just haven't seen the numbers in it to justify that that being shorter matters a whole bunch when it comes to NFL quarterbacking. The Steve Young, wasn't Steve Young left-handed too?
He is left-handed, yeah.
Still is. Yeah, he didn't lose it.
No.
The Toyota commercials he's in.
The concussion didn't affect his left hand.
Yeah, that hit against the Cardinals didn't affect it. Yeah, so that works with the Manu analogy. Manu, Steve Young, perfect, right there. Perfect analogy. Plus, Steve Young came to the NFL late, later, almost right into his prime. Manu Ginobili comes to the NBA right in his prime. So there you go.
A little before his prime, but okay.
Why do you have to be a well, actually?
Oh, man, I got pissed today. Bucksketball showed this video, like this vine of Giannis Antetokounmpo dribbling the quote-unquote length of the floor in three dribbles. And he caught the ball at the opposite free throw line, took three dribbles, and got a layup. Which was very impressive. And then, they had people going, oh, I don't know if that's that special. And, oh, I don't know a lot of guys do that. And then another person's like, I guess we're calling length of the floor at the free throw line. I'm like, really? Like, I just want to know.
This guy's watch. He was worried about it becoming a trend, but he stopped it.
Yeah, like... Are you such a serious person because you have the stick up your ass, or do you have the stick up the ass because you're such a serious person? That's what I want to know.
Here's how I got well, actually. It was the Spurs-Warriors game, and I didn't know why the Warriors should even bother playing Steph Curry, because once Andre Iguodala was getting rested on the end of the back-to-back, and they don't have Bogut, they don't have Lee, it's just, there's no way. You're not going to win the game. Why even mess with Curry and Klay Thompson? So I just said, you might as well just play anybody in this sort of scenario, just unleash the Nedovic, doesn't matter. And then I'm besieged by, well, actually, is about Nedovic getting a concussion a couple days ago and therefore not being able to play. And I feel like a bad person, because really the concussion is a bad thing, and I shouldn't then turn it into me being annoyed at people telling me about his concussion. But really, I don't – why am I getting all these corrections on this? What does it matter? It's obviously a metaphorical just play anybody. You know, we're talking about somebody who really can't play in the NBA. I mean,
it's not like it's not like you're like, I think Keith – I think – I really think
fly
Keith
him,
Jennings.
Fly him out now. Fly him from Santa Cruz right now.
Back to the Spurs.
Yes.
Yeah, I would say Manu is their most important person for the postseason. I don't think they can win a championship with him not having a few really good games.
That might be so. But
especially against the Thunder.
They have so many guys. It's really impressive how they are a complete team.
Yeah, but this is how I did like some Sean Livingston breakdown earlier in the week, and I've really been on this ball handler kick. Of mm-hmm. like, you need that second ball handler. Kawhi's not that guy. Like, he's really, like, he can make plays, but he's not a guy where you're going to ask him to break down the defense.
Is Marco nearly that guy?
No. Oh, God, no.
Mm.
Oh, I wouldn't trust Marco going to his left for anything.
Yeah, yeah. He has his moments.
Yeah, he has his moments. Like, Marco's not bad. I just don't think he's a playmaker. I think he's a scorer. Mm-hmm. I think there's a big difference. But with Manu, like, having him out there with Tony Parker, I just like that when he's on his game, it's just such a huge, huge advantage for them, because they can not only move the ball with extra passing, but they have an extra guy that can take that pass and dribble penetrate again to disrupt the defense.
Tony Parker recently, he hasn't had the typical Tony Parker season, but he's still the master at the check swing jump shot that becomes a pass for an easy basket.
Yes.
You know what I mean? He does that so often. It's amazing where he's probing the defense. Then he's going up for a shot. Oh, no, it's a layup for somebody else. He does that so often. It's his most impressive quality, aside from the weird just layup ability that he still has at this age.
Manu's been good this year. I'm looking at his numbers.
Yeah, no, he has. He's Sixth man of the year candidate, easy.
Yeah, he's no longer a corpse. He was a corpse last year.
People really wanted to write him off in the playoffs, that was the end of Manu, and that's what it is. But the Spurs keep showing us that if you rest guys throughout season after season after season, they have more to show you at the end of their career than you would expect.
Yes, and maybe that's part of like current training methods, because we always marvel over the last few years over these older players that can still get it done, but I think we need to adjust to the current training times.
Yes, and they've adjusted masterfully. You need both, though. You need people who are going to buy in and be okay with their raw statistics looking worse, because we still judge players based on their counting stats. How many points per game do you have? How many rebounds per game do you have? And because of that, you take a big hit in terms of your reputation for being so rested. I've argued this with Manu Ginobili, for instance, where he would be thought of as such a better player if he played typical starter minutes. He might have been injury prone, but if he was in a different scenario, he would have gotten way more credit. And I think that the Thunder wanted James Harden to be their Manu Ginobili, and that's just not his personality. He's not going to take a pay cut and take a minutes reduction when he can just go off to Houston and be a big giant star. So it's hard to get people who are willing to buy into that sort of method.
Oh, I agree. I would have said, like, I did say this, I still believe this, that from, like, 2006 to 2008, I think Manu was one of the top 10 players in the league.
Oh, I'd completely agree. I mean, per minute, if you look at the advanced numbers, he's up there with Kobe Bryant. Now, it's a big deal that Kobe Bryant could still be Kobe Bryant while playing a lot more minutes, but Manu's at that level. He's just...
Yeah, it just shows you how good he is.
Yes.
Like, it doesn't say, like, oh, he was as good as Kobe. It's just, like, this is how elite he was.
Exactly. And one of my favorite players one of the most creative players I've ever seen. And here I am, I'm eulogizing him like he's not still playing. He's still playing. He's still good.
Yeah, well, I feel like you just wrote him off for last year's playoffs.
Well, we were talking about how the Spurs were able to succeed with Manu playing terribly, and therefore that was a strike against the idea of him being the crucial guy. And maybe the secret to the Spurs team is there is no crucial guy. They're so well-balanced. Everybody keeps moving. That was the big difference when the Warriors were playing the Spurs, is that often on possessions, maybe Steph Curry would be dribbling, nobody else would be even moving, they'd be watching him, and on the Spurs possessions, everybody, it looks like indoor soccer, everybody's doing little circles and moving all the time, and that's a major, major difference, and you wonder why more teams aren't able to do that.
I haven't worked out the math yet, but I think Tony Parker is at 30.1 minutes per game.
Mm-hmm.
And if he drops below 30, which I don't know what that would take over the last few games, but if you drop below 30, all three of their big three with Duncan, Parker, and Ginobili would be under 30 minutes a game, which I feel like would be kind of an accomplishment. And this is part of the reason where I'm really on this Greg Popovich needs to be coach of the year kick.
Oh yeah, definitely.
I'm all in. I wrote a thing last night on it. I just think that you. Because they're good every year doesn't keep him out of the voting or out of the thought process. Like Jeff Hornacek's been fantastic. He's been a fun surprise. Terry Stotts was great for most of the season. I'm sure I'm forgetting somebody here. Other coaches have been really good. Doc Rivers has been really good. But like Greg Popovich has done the best coaching job.
Well, we have to stop doing this thing with Coach of the Year where we just take the guy who wildly exceeded expectations, because inevitably some luck came into play with that, and then that coach dips below expectations, and that's why the Coach of the Year always gets fired.
Right, and what if we didn't know what the hell we were talking about going into the year?
That too.
Right, like, yeah. It's like, oh, we exceeded our expectations. What if our expectations were just stupid?
Yeah, what if we didn't know that guy X was this good? So really it's just a we were stupid award as opposed to you did something great. It's just
you know what it is
every year.
It's the well actually award.
Not the well actually award.
It's like, well actually they were quite good going into the year, we just didn't know it yet.
What do you think of how Popovich is the focal point of the interest in this team, and how unusual that is, and why the Spurs still don't rate to a certain extent? I know that's the big conversation that a lot of Spurs fans hate and a lot of people don't like about how people are disinterested, but it's true. When you look at the winning they've had, where they're about to pass, I believe they're about to pass the Lakers for all-time winning percentage, why don't they have the following that a Dallas Cowboys in their state has, or a Packers, or St. Louis Cardinals in baseball? Why? What has gone on with this?
Well, they just don't have the same market as those other places, right?
Yeah, but I really feel there's something to be said for how they haven't marketed themselves beyond those great...
Certainly.
What is that supermarket chain with those commercials? I can't remember off the top of my head. There are initials in it.
Oh, the HEB? Is that what it is?
Yeah, those commercials are fantastic. But beyond that, they haven't... And what's so interesting about that to me is that it might attribute to their success to a certain extent, that their monastic ability to phase out the outside noise, it might not be just coincidental that they've employed that. It might be that if we start really marketing ourselves, if we start really bringing people into this and trying to help them understand us and brand ourselves, then we'll screw ourselves up.
Yeah, I can see that. I kind of think it's manufactured this way, and it's brilliant that Pop is the focal point, right? Like what pressure do any of, and maybe it's because, they've won titles together with the big three in San Antonio, but like what pressure have any of those guys had in the last decade?
None.
They have the expectation of winning every year. It's just like somehow nobody cares if they win or how much they win, and it's not even can Tim Duncan be considered greater than Kobe Bryant? Like nobody cares.
I will say, if they wanted to get people interested, they really should have played up Tony Parker's possible anti-Semitism. That was their shot.
Oh wow.
For some reason, they tried to downplay and deny it. I don't know why.
Yeah, that's a weird PR decision, but I'm not a PR director. What do I know?
it would have really animated some interest in this team. You know, some hatred on one side, some perhaps unseemly people then gravitating to your team. But that was their shot at generating some buzz. And for some reason, for some odd reason, they ran away from it.
You know, there's always next year.
There's always next year. There's always the possibility that Parker can do a Quinnell next year.
Yeah.
And,
I do
get himself out of that situation.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating that there are no expectations. That's the thing. Like, they can't exceed expectations because nobody cares.
Yeah, and when people say nobody respects the Spurs or nobody's talking about them, there's a difference between apathy and disrespect.
Right.
You know,
I think we respect them so much that we don't bring them into the BS conversations we have about all these other teams.
Yeah, people expect them to be a title contender and right up there. They're not writing them off. We just don't care if they win it. And that's how have they manufactured this? And is this a good thing? It's a bad thing for basketball.
It's a perfect storm of the coach they have, the players they've brought in, the system they've created throughout the organization, the market they're in. I mean, it's really a perfect storm of all this stuff. I would love to know, you know, 20 years from now, what will that be like for them? Like, we wonder, like, oh, what is this now for them? What, you know, when Duncan retires, when Pop retires. But no, I want to be removed from the situation. I want 2 decades from now, what do we think of them as an organization? Do we lump them into those same crazy conversations we have about all these other teams? Like Indiana, for example. Like, do we lump them in as another Indiana?
Can you and that's what's so funny is that Indiana right now has more buzz. We can't attribute it all to market because way more people were interested in Indiana and Paul George, and now they're failing, and everyone's talking about that. More attention than the Spurs who have won things. I just want to add one, as long as we're talking about the Spurs.
Yeah.
Could you envision Kevin Love in the black and silver?
I think he would be very smart to do that.
They have space in 2015.
Yeah.
They have space. Nobody talked about that either because we're just all Lakers all the time.
Right. Like, if he wants the best situation for himself and to learn how to be, you know, the ultimate winner and all that crap that he has to live up to, he should go to the Spurs. Leave Minnesota. Don't go to the Lakers. Like, go to the Spurs. Go to that organization. Learn from the best.
And we never discuss this as a possibility. And yet, these superstars, they tell us, oh, we're all about winning. I'm all about winning. A, nobody's all about anything. But if you were all about winning, then this would be the free agent destination you'd consider.
Oh, can you imagine LeBron in San Antonio?
Whoa.
Him working with Pop?
What a move.
How fun would that be? How fascinating would that be?
Well, I think Pop is going to retire, so that's the complaint.
If Pop had LeBron, you think he would retire?
Probably wouldn't retire if he had LeBron.
I think just the joy of having a player like that to coach and to keep teaching. I mean, because there's still plenty of stuff for LeBron to learn. Like, what he could do with that would just be mind-boggling.
Oh, man, that's such an interesting scenario. And then LeBron would really be taking care of his body towards the end of his career and playing that 30 minutes a game or fewer.
Let's start the Kevin Love-LeBron James tandem to San Antonio rumors.
With Kawhi Leonard and Tiago Splitter.
Yeah, what else do we have to do?
They still might need a rim protector. I know that Tiago is a really good interior defender. Well, I don't. I have got some feelings on verticality. I don't know if I like that verticality enables people like Tiago Splitter to be great at defense. It really enables the unathletic big man.
Yeah, you know, you're against verticality. When I'm all for it. I'm all for it.
I kind of am. I feel like make a play on the ball, like jump and try to block a shot.
That's not always defense though. That's not always smart defense. We chastised Serge Ibaka from 2 years ago for jumping at every pump fake and trying to block everything, but then we want guys to jump at everything and try to block everything. Like, no, that's not always good defense. Sometimes just getting in the way is the best defense you can have.
Well, my compromise, the thing that I want to do is if it's above that circle that we have for charges, okay, verticality. But if it's below, then no, it's a foul because it makes no sense that you can take a charge, you know, above that line. But you can't below it, but yet you can jump into somebody, and that's okay. It's bizarre to me. So how about within that restricted area, no verticality?
I would rather a rule in which you can't jump into a defender.
Well, unfortunately, we don't have that rule. That'd be very hard to legislate. That'd be very difficult.
No, I feel forward. Like no, there is a natural jump. No one jumps horizontally. No one jumps with their shoulders down. Like, this is a play that where you pump fake, a defender jumps straight up in the air, and then they jump into that defender, and it's a foul on the defender. I think it's a crap call. I hate that call.
Mm-hmm.
And I root for a guy, Kevin Love, who uses that all the time. And I just think it's a crap move.
Oh, he's so good at drawing fouls.
He's brilliant at it. Yeah,
it's not talked about often when it comes to Kevin Love. Same with his passing. They'll talk about his outlet passing, but not his passing in general. But you know how it is. You know, until he's on a team that wins something.
Until he gets to the Spurs with LeBron James, we're not going to know truly how great he is.
That would be interesting. But then, what do you do with Kawhi? I guess they'll figure it out
later.
What
do you mean? What do you do with Kawhi?
You figure something out. That would be really cool. I want the rumors to start up about Kevin Love to the Spurs. I know everyone's saying that he wants to be in a big city, but not every team is the Spurs. Not every small market team is the Spurs, you know? And what if Pop really really starts recruiting? Imagine recruiting Pop. What would he say?
Do you want to be – I think he would just say, do you want to stop sucking so much?
You would say something crusty. He'd really challenge you.
Yeah. I feel like he would be a lot like the grandpa in Little Miss Sunshine.
Well, I remember that not that movie because I never saw it.
It's not very good. It was good the first time I saw it. The more you watch it, it's not very good.
You know what people don't talk about is that a lot of Steve Carell movies not very good.
like what?
Like that crazy, sexy, stupid thing, blah blah blah, love thing.
Oh, Crazy Stupid Love.
That was a terrible movie.
That's ruined by Ryan Gosling, who's an awful actor that nobody wants to talk about.
It's also just a terrible movie with terrible plot lines, and it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and like they tried to bring it all together at the end, and it's like, I don't care. I don't care if it was all connected.
And he's okay with Julianne Moore cheating on him? And why is Julianne Moore cheating on everybody in his movies?
She is one unfaithful lady.
She's faithless. Utterly faithless.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter if her partner is female or male. She's just going for it.
Yeah, no. She's animalistic.
Yeah, she wants what she wants. She's as fiery as her hair color.
Okay, Crazy Stupid Love's an awful movie. Yeah. What else?
It's hard to remember bad movies. He wasn't in We Made a Zoo. He was in some of the Dinner with Schmucks.
Are you thinking of Evan Almighty or Bruce Almighty? Evan Almighty? Is that what you're thinking of? Because that's the only thing I think of with possible zoo animals.
There's Dinner with Schmucks. Isn't he Noah Dinner with Russell Crowe?
Yeah. Dinner with Schmucks is an awful movie. That's truly atrocious.
I believe he was Noah before Russell Crowe stepped into that role.
He was. He was Evan Almighty.
I mean, don't get me started on Russell Crowe. We'll have to go along if we do that. And Gladiator, which I think is an overrated movie.
But you're anti Braveheart, you're anti Gladiator. That's very predictable.
Who got together and agreed that every single ancient Greek and ancient Roman talked British? When did we decide that? Why is it all?
Wait, why do you need? Part of the brilliance of the movie Valkyrie is that everyone speaks German and everyone has a German accent except for Tom Cruise. Sometimes you just have to suspend reality and just think, like, all right, I don't want to see Tom Cruise. Well, okay, I do want to see Tom Cruise attempt a German accent. But for the most part, I love the fact that he's just like, screw that. I'm not conforming.
I would love to hear him attempt a German accent. The German Tom Cruise would be amazing. I would love it.
Yeah.
I'd absolutely love that. It's unfortunate, and it is pretty funny. I think that's some good comedy in there. I'm just saying that it shows how stupid we are as Americans that we just think that the British are foreign, and I'm not sure even what's happening
the
there.
The British are foreign.
No, I know, but they are the symbol for foreignness to us somehow, and therefore we can just apply their accent to anything out of the country.
Maybe
involving white people.
Hoop idea.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's our way of still getting back at them for the Revolutionary War and unfair taxes and all that stuff.
But they're winning in 300.
But we're saying, like, your culture doesn't matter, so we'll just insert you into all these other cultures.
Ah, that could be true. That could be true. And in that case, I'll let it slide. I'll endorse it. Anyway, on the Pop recruiting, don't you remember the story where he was trying to get Tim Duncan to come back in the fold, and over beers in some backyard, he got Tim Duncan to not go to Orlando with Grant Hill? So Pop's done some recruiting before.
Yeah, so what would he do with LeBron? Would he just
get
like
him drunk.
Go to Live?
Get him drunk, yeah, go to Live. You know, we already know that he's good at sending Boris Diaw the steak skewer bloody Mary. I mean, he knows how to use libations to his advantage, and you know, we know he's a vintner of some kind, or at least a wine collector. So
that
it would have to be part of the pitch, would be getting LeBron James or Kevin Love 6 sheets to the wind.
Sure. Yeah, no, I get that. Yeah, I agree with that. You asked the difference between the Spurs and the Pacers. The difference is that the Pacers have a very marketable star, whereas the Spurs just don't.
The guy who can't make layups?
The guy. People are angry at you about that. How dare you cite percentages?
It's weird to me because I like Paul George, and then it turns into, is he overrated? I think that he's so great at defense, and we underrate defense to the extent that it's almost hard to underrate Paul George. You know, he's just a genius at getting around screens and shielding his guy from getting the ball passed to him. But the layup thing, it's just so odd to me that a 6'9" in shoes, you know, in the parentheses in shoes, but a scoring wing would be so bad at layups, so it does capture my fascination. And, you know, I do bring it up. I don't bring it up to hate on him per se. I'm just interested as to why somebody, because you don't see it. You don't see guys who are that bad at it.
Do you think that it could be a thing like with Melo, where it's clearly not the same, but something similar?
No,
where
Melo's
just going for offensive rebounds, right? Yeah.
It's clearly a setup for his offensive rebound layup. So it's a little bit different. With Paul George, he's just careening in there. I know there was a story in the local, in the Indianapolis paper, about how he doesn't think he's getting calls, and it seems to almost be in his head where he's going in there seeking the call, totally unbalanced, and just hurling the ball off the backboard.
Could this be like a Derrick Rose thing back in the day before his MVP season?
In what capacity?
Derrick Rose would claim, I mean, there was a little bit of talk about how he didn't get superstar calls and he kind of had to earn them and he was avoiding contact. I wonder if Paul George is kind of in a similar way, avoiding contact in a way that throws him off balance. But he thinks he's getting hit, so then he thinks he's not getting a superstar call.
Well, I could understand that, except he's getting way more calls this season after last season's emergence as a star. And him and Steph Curry both, I mean, I would have to really dig and dive into those numbers, but it seems like both of them are getting more calls after they got more renown, and that one helps the other. And let's see the free throw rates. Free throw rate for Paul George last year was 0.233. This year it's 0.335. So he's getting more calls, significantly more calls. He just seems to feel as though he should be allotted more calls, as I'm sure all players do.
Yeah, maybe he's just not good at layups.
That could be. It seems like it's a tough skill to improve, and from year to year, it's fairly consistent. He was better last year, but he was driving not as often, and maybe he's just kind of skinny.
And he also has more attention on him this year.
Yeah.
Defensively.
Why do the capes come out when you cite this? 47% layups for a guy like that, it's just unusual. I mean, Ricky Rubio shoots layups better. Now, you could argue that Ricky Rubio's breakaways end in layups, which helps his percentage, and Paul George has...
Oh, he doesn't really have breakaways.
He doesn't, you know? So the point is that they're comparable, and considering that we talk about Ricky Rubio as some sort of... I don't even know, but having this blight, this awful flaw around the rim, unless Paul George is dunking, and that's a significant difference, that's also his flaw, you know, unless he's dunking. So... It's just interesting that way. And even with the dunks, George is shooting worse around the rim than Steph Curry, and a lot more of his baskets around there are assisted than Curry's is. So basically, Paul George is worse around the rim than Steph Curry. That's weird. That's just weird.
That is weird. Maybe Paul George should just try to dunk every time.
I would endorse that. We would all be more entertained if he did that. He's an incredible dunker, you know?
He is. He is, just to look it up, I looked it up, from last year, he was drawing 3.2 fouls per game.
Mm-hmm.
This year, 4.7.
Yeah. So...
Significant.
He's getting those calls, but I don't know, and there is discussion of whether the off-the-court stuff influences him, and we want to reject that. I know it's very basketball writer chic to reject that as some silly thing the fan thinks and we have to poo-poo it. But you got to wonder at this point, right? I mean, he's kind of cratering right now, and it's not inconceivable that some embarrassing off-the-court stuff when you're young could seep into your play. It's not easy to wonder.
It would be almost inhuman for it not to. Like, I know some guys can compartmentalize that and kind of set it aside and just focus, but that would be a very embarrassing and difficult thing to get out of your head.
And he's had two of them, and it might be tough at this stage of his career to deal with that. So we don't know if that's the reason for why it's happening, but it's not crazy to think that it has an influence.
It's very possible it's just a coincidence. But
it is.
But the two things did happen at the same time.
And Roy Hibbert must have some sort of secret scandal that we don't know about.
I think his scandal is, I play on a team where the guards don't know how to make post-entry passes.
Yeah, that could be one. And there's also just not enough space. And that's why the Pacers are in an interesting spot right here, because so much of their identity is based on this, we'll beat you up, we'll go big when you go small. But their offense is struggling to the extent to which where maybe you guys should maybe open it up, maybe run Paul George at the power forward spot for some minutes and change it up a bit and reduce David West's role. And I'm not sure they're prepared to do that.
Yeah, I mean, if you do that, then you may, or even just putting Chris Copeland at the four.
Yes.
A guy who can space it, because you're not going to put Paul George at the four and then put Evan Turner at the three. That's not spacing anything.
Yeah. Well, that's the problem. The trading for Evan Turner. What happened with Larry Bird? Did he get drunk on his power? Is what happened?
No. It wasn't a bad trade idea. It wasn't something that helped them, but it didn't hurt them either. Like, Danny Granger was giving them nothing.
Yeah, but Evan Turner is, as we call it on this podcast, a saboteur.
Maybe he is a saboteur.
That's a problem.
Maybe he and Andrew Bynum, we had these theories of conspiracy of Chris, you know, Chris Paul and LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and all these guys wanted to play together in the 2008 Olympics. Maybe last year the Philadelphia 76ers didn't like the rise of the Pacers and how they were the darlings when they thought that the Sixers were supposed to get to that point. And so they made a pact, hey, next year, let's get on this Pacers team and let's just sabotage them.
I love it. They're sending steak skewered martinis left and right, slider skewered martinis left and right.
You're really in on this slider skewer Bloody Mary.
I need to see it. I need to try it. So maybe they're doing that, and maybe they're shorting the Pacers, like in the stock market, where they're gambling as gamblers against them winning, and their way of point shaving is just infecting the whole team.
We've got a new Donaghy on our hands.
Yeah, a new Donaghy. Off the court, on the court, they're doing everything in their power to make good on the bets they have for the Heat to have the number one seed in the conference.
Well, I can't possibly see how this wouldn't be the case.
There's no way. There's no way it can't be. No. There's no way we can get sued for saying so.
Which teams in the West do you think that this Pacers team could beat?
Yeah, this is one of those silly hypotheticals.
Like, let's say any team in the West top nine can make the NBA Finals against a Pacers team.
Well, yeah, it's the silly hypothetical that I enjoy of could this happen from this conference, because we like dwelling on the conference difference. My teams to lose to the Pacers in the series are as follows. The Warriors, just because Paul George guarding Steph Curry scares me. He totally shut him down at the end of the last time the two of them played. Their ability to throw that at the Warriors is a little bit worrisome, since that just shuts the Warriors down. When Steph Curry, when the ball is cut off to him, when they can't get the ball to him, they completely crumble. So I'd pick the Pacers to win that series.
Yes.
I would pick them to lose to the other bottom teams in the West, though. I'd pick them to lose to the Mavericks and lose to the Suns. Any team that spreads them out really gives them problems.
I think they would beat the Mavericks. No, they beat. I think they beat the Suns for sure.
Did you see those two games? I know it's two games, it's small sample size, but yeah. The Suns have worked them.
Yeah, absolutely. The Suns are a very good team, but I just think you put them in a 7-game series. It's just.
I'm going Suns.
I'm going Pacers in five.
Ooh, wow, confident.
Yeah,
your boy Roy Hibbert.
My boy Roy. Yeah, I don't think that would be much trouble. I think it would be a good series, but I think it would be short. The Mavericks, actually, now that I think about it a little bit more, that's an interesting one. Could the Mavericks possibly survive with an interior just defensively and on the boards of Dirk, DeJuan Blair, Brandon Wright, Samuel Dalembert?
It'd be tough.
They'd have to hit everything.
Wright would probably get sent to the hospital at some point.
David West would floss with Brandon Wright.
Yes. He would. That is not a good place for poor Brandon Wright, sad Dracula. Yeah, that'd be difficult. I like teams that can spread out the Pacers, and it seems to compromise their advantages defensively.
What about a team that does pretty much the same thing they do? Grizzlies, Pacers.
The Grizz.
That would be fascinating. That would also be the lowest rated sporting event in history.
Yeah, I think I have to lean Grizz on that one. I have to lean Grizz.
I might too. Because Mike Miller's bound to have one gigantic, inexplicable game, right?
Yes.
So there's one win right there. I'd take Marcus Gasol and Zebo over Hibbert and David West.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's much of a question.
Yeah.
And then you're talking about can James Johnson and Tony Allen slow down Paul George enough? And then you've got, you know,
Tony Allen would be a problem because he, like Paul George, is great at denying passes to the guy he's guarding. And then what do the Pacers do?
Yeah, and then you've got, you know, George Hill, who I like, who's very good, against Mike Conley, who's probably the best defensive point guard in the league.
George Hill. Poor George Hill. It seems like
George Hill is a shooting guard in a point guard's body.
It seems like he's an awesome backup point guard. An awesome backup point guard who has been thrust into this role that might be a little too big for him.
This will mean nothing to you because it's a baseball reference, but there are those guys who aren't quite good enough to be in the major leagues, but they're too good to be in the AAA, and they're considered like 4A guys.
Mm.
And he might be that in terms of like starter versus reserve.
I didn't know such a guy existed as a 4A guy. That's a new term, and I like it. I like the idea of him being a 4A guy between starter and backup.
I love the idea now of you trying to work this into a basketball conversation, either on Twitter or in an article, and just it's going to be so awkward for you.
Yeah, I'll screw it up. I'll make people age, people that will think I'm talking about wrestling. Yeah, that's what will happen. With George, he doesn't turn the ball over, but it's because he doesn't take risks. He doesn't take risks. And
with George Hill?
Yeah, George Hill.
Yeah, he turns the ball over when he tries to make a play.
Yeah. And maybe that's because he's scared. Maybe it's a lack of vision. I referenced this on THTV, but there's this great old clip of Chris Paul talking about assists. It's fantastic. I'd recommend it. It's from back when he's with the Hornets. And he says that the thing someone who gives assists, the great passer, needs most is guts. Because you really have to take those risks that other people are too scared to take in order to make these plays. And I think about that sometimes when I watch George Hill, that he's not willing to take those risks. And it's like, and it's great. It's great that he's not turning the ball over, but the whole offense is stalled because he's not giving up the risk that results in the high reward.
Yeah, you do have a situation where he is very good in the pick and roll in terms of coming off that screen and getting a shot. Mm-hmm. I think he's very effective there, but you ask him to make a play that's not that pull-up jumper, and then you kind of have problems.
That Kawhi for Hill trade's looking pretty brutal. I know the justification of you can't have two wings, and Paul George gets to flourish, and if you had Kawhi, you wouldn't do this or that. But with them paying George Hill the $8 million for a long contract at a position that he's better than maybe what you get on the open market, but it wouldn't be a huge difference to get a slightly worse guy for almost nothing. It's kind of bad news.
Well, I think the problem is
recently worse as time goes on.
I think the problem is they don't surround him with shooters. George Hill.
It's so confusing at this point. George Hill or Paul George?
George Hill. I think the problem is that he should be more of a Jameer Nelson, Mario Chalmers type of point guard.
Yeah.
And he's kind of in that gray area, and that's the thing, is it's a usage of his effectiveness that's not quite maximized.
I would agree with that. I still think that trade, even if it was understandable, it's a trade that looked even in its immediate aftermath, and just because of the ages of the players and the talents of the players involved, is going to look really bad in retrospect as time goes on. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I think the fact that, like, if they had given him a 3 or 4 year deal instead of a 5 year deal, it would look a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the ensuing contract, I don't think it's a bad contract. I just don't think it's a good contract.
Yeah.
It's kind of in that, like, possible dead zone. Like, that, basically, like, the Al Harrington contract.
And if Kawhi Leonard becomes the guy that Pop seems to think he can become, although who can we really trust Pop? He's the guy who had glowing praise of George Hill and said he'd be the next Tony Parker and the heir to that situation. So who knows? Maybe Pop's just talking up certain guys because they need that confidence. But if what Pop envisions
up in that trade value,
yeah, exactly. He's goosing it up. He's getting everyone drunk on that trade value. But if Kawhi becomes the guy Pop thinks he'll become, it will look like not the best trade in the world.
I would say one of the best moves of the last offseason was the Al Jefferson signing in Charlotte.
Boom.
I really think that we have not made a big enough deal about this, and now the Charlotte Bobcats are marketing BigAlsPaint.com.
Oh, it's so cool.
It's a great marketing tool. Great little website they've created to promote Big Al for an all-NBA team.
What's your favorite paint shade that they have named for Al Jefferson here? It might be Aggressive Orange. Although
Aggressive Orange.
Although Hard-Nosed Orange, that's up there. I like Pick and Roll Blue because it's so uncreative.
I think my favorite is Incomparable Orange.
It's literally incomparable. You know what's weird? So if you guys go to this website and see the shades of paint, the paint shades darken. And I kind of feel like that means that they get better a little bit, that you're going up and up and up.
Yeah, because you go from Aggressive Orange to Efficient Orange.
Yeah, Efficient Orange is the darkest shade of orange. That's the orangiest. And that's just – same with Grabbing Boards Gray. It feels like we're at a diner. Don't they sound like diner diner titles?
It does. Incomparable Orange looks a lot like Unstoppable Orange, which doesn't make it that incomparable.
Unstoppable Orange. It's funny they didn't go Brilliant Orange like the soccer book. I felt like they did that intentionally. They should have given it a little shout out.
I do like for the moves, they've got Up and Under Blue, Jump Hook Blue, Drop Step Blue, push shot Blue, and then the darkest one is Pump Fake Blue, which is very apt because all he does is pump fake in the post.
I feel like we sound like pilots now, too. Like, jump shot blue, fadeaway blue, back to the basket blue, turn around blue, pick and roll blue. Something's wrong with the paint. Something's wrong with the plane. Double double gray.
Do you think that they've got Big Al's paint versus the leading brands, where they compare him with other possible centers for the All NBA team, and I mean, there's more context needed than what they provide here. Like defense, for example, but you know, compared to Chris Bosh, compared to Marc Gasol and Roy Hibbert and DeAndre Jordan, and you know, maybe
I will say, don't get swayed.
Dwight Howard,
don't get swayed by this, Zach, because they're very selective with the stats they're showing.
Absolutely,
they show field goal percentage. They don't show true shooting percentage, and I think they do that for a reason.
Right, of course they do. I mean, it would actually help them in the arguments against DeAndre Howard or DeAndre Jordan and Dwight Howard.
Yeah, well, you know, it would, but not in the argument, say, against Chris Bosh, right?
Right, or maybe Joakim Noah.
I will say this. I thought the Bobcats would be the worst team this year, and I am very impressed. I think some of that is Clifford. I know that he is a Stan Van Gundy disciple, and you can see that influence. But Jefferson's had a great year, and I would be happy to see him on an All-NBA team, on the third team, you know, not above that. That would be pretty cool. You know, so, I'm swayed by this website. This website puts him over the top for me.
So you got to factor it in to your vote. Who would be your first team?
Oh, this is so difficult. I'm on the spot right here. Okay.
I'm not asking for every player. I just want big man. Who's your center?
Oh, it's hard to choose between, Dwight Howard. And he's missing some games at the end, right? Dwight is?
Yeah, he's missing I think he's supposed to miss like 10 days.
Here's a question. How does the All-NBA work now? Do we do centers or is there no center? How does this work?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't really have that information.
In theory, we should have it.
Let's just pretend we do centers.
Yeah, we'll pretend. Because then I was thinking, what does Anthony Davis count as? Because he's essentially their center. Okay, so I guess I go Dwight Howard. Is that what you go?
I'm going to... Yeah. No, I'm going to be quirky, and I'm going to go Joakim Noah.
That's not a bad choice. I mean, I get.
I just wrote a breakdown of his thing. Go to CBSSports.com and read it if you wouldn't mind.
I will read it.
And I wasn't actually talking to you. I was talking to the listener.
Okay, I sometimes forget that they're here.
It was very narcissistic of you to assume that.
I'm an only child. What can I say?
That's true. I'm gonna go Noah just because. Why the hell not? I don't think there's a clear cut guy this year.
Yeah. Okay. So that's fair. And then I think I go Noah for second team. For my second team, and then third, man, I was just talking all about how Al Jeff deserves to make one of the teams, and I would be happy to see it. I'd be happy to see it because he's such a good guy, but I'd probably either go Hibbert or Bosch above him, sadly.
Yeah, that's the tough one. I think there's a very good case for him against Roy Hibbert, because for all of the arguments you make for Al and against Al, it's the inverse with Hibbert, right?
Yeah.
And so it is kind of hard to keep Bosch off there, though. Bosch has been really good.
He's so good.
Like, his numbers don't pop, but it's, God, he's good.
I mean, the over 60% true shooting, just how skilled he is, how he spaces the floor with the three-point shot now.
His defense is so good.
Yeah, so good in that pick-and-roll defense. He digs down deep to rip guards and make guards uncomfortable when they're dribbling. I think I go Bosch there, but there's a fantastic argument for Big Al.
What about Marc Gasol?
Not enough time.
He missed too many games?
Too many games.
Because I think they've had the best defense since he came back from injury.
Oh, he's clearly at the talent level to compete, but yeah. It's tough when you miss so many games.
I got to tell you, one of the funniest Twitter moments in my life, for me, was I was watching the Grizzlies last night. They were here in Minneapolis, and Marc Gasol is just knocking down jumpers everywhere. He's, you know, dumping off passes. Like, he's just such a skilled guy. And I made some Twitter joke about how he's so skilled. He puts IKEA furniture together in like under 15 minutes or something like that.
A little most interesting man in the world.
Yeah, like so. Yeah, a little goof on that. And within like 3 minutes, somebody tweeted me pictures that Marc Gasol once tweeted of him putting together IKEA furniture.
Oh my God.
How it was just such a funny, like, you know, heightening of whatever terrible joke I made. And the best part was he referred to his entertainment center as a TV table.
Oh, so foreign.
Yeah. It was adorable.
Even if you went to high school in Memphis. Still so foreign.
I don't think Al makes my third team. I do have to think about it a little bit more. I want to crunch a few numbers and watch a little bit more, but I do like considering him for it.
Yeah, and it's hard to really ding him for the defense when they're playing good defense this season.
Right, like, he's not a good defender, but they're a top 10 defense, and he plays, I think, the most minutes on the team.
Mm-hmm.
So he can't be that bad, right?
Right.
And it's not like they paired him with, like, Serge Ibaka. Like, he's paired with Josh McRoberts.
Mm-hmm. Well, I shouldn't be making this not enough games argument with Marc Gasol, because if I'm going to be putting the cape on for Andre Iguodala for Defensive Player of the Year or first team, I can't be getting myself into these sorts of...
You just got caught up in your own cape of lies.
Yeah, my own cape of lies. My own hypocrisy cape, which I often wear.
Cape of Lies is my favorite superhero drama.
Oh, Cape of Lies is fantastic.
It's on TNT. It's fantastic.
It's got Sedgwick. You know, she's actually in some of those episodes too. They have her do double duty.
I thought it was.
Awesome would it be when Sedgwick is interrogating people in that show that they don't watch, if she just came in with a cape and they never explained it?
Yeah, that would be fantastic.
It's a Dracula cape.
Yeah, why not? What if her thing was, like, every third interrogation she dressed in a Halloween costume? She walked in with, like, fangs and a cape.
There's a big tiger.
Lumberjack.
Really mess with the person you're interrogating. And then when they keep asking you about it, you just don't even explain it or acknowledge it.
Yeah.
Like, so where were you the night of the 18th? Are you just like a tiger? Where were you the night of the 18th? I'd watch that show.
Yeah. I watch that show because I think they're, in a way, a partner of CBS with the whole March Madness thing. So it's a fantastic show.
Fantastic show. Yeah. Fantastic partnership.
And let me just say the series finale of How I Met Your Mother, just fantastic.
Just fantastic. Yeah. I will say though, it was odd to see the anger about it and the backlash about it. You know, because I have a spoiler alert on this. Because I had prior knowledge of who the mother would be. I had prior knowledge. It was sent to me, and I knew, so I didn't quite get why everyone was so angry.
Insider information.
Spoiler alert: the mother is a fictional person. Like I knew the mother, fictional person. So it was just odd to me to know that reveal, to see it coming ahead of time, and to see people yet that angry about it.
Yeah. Well, people like to get angry over things that are great.
Is that your motto when people are mad at you? I just got a great Spurs fan motto sent to me from Tim Varner, texted to me when I was joking about how smug Spurs fans are getting. And he goes, "We're not smug, we're enlightened."
Yeah, that's not smug at all.
I think he did it tongue in cheek.
Yeah, no, I would assume it. Tim's funny. I like Tim a lot.
Yeah, Tim's wonderful.
Tim's but one of the good ones.
Did make me want the Suns to beat them in the first round.
Sure. Why wouldn't you?
My indomitable Suns, who are going to beat the Pacers and the Spurs in the playoffs in the first round.
That's impressive.
Yeah, you know? Finally Dragic will get the attention that he so desires.
Yeah, he's gotten plenty of attention this year.
Well, he's like the Spurs. He's the, why isn't anybody talking about the guy we're all talking about?
It's honestly kind of amazing he's not on the Spurs.
It is.
Feels like a guy they'd get.
And he's probably the guy that Spurs fans are most scared of because he dealt, well, the last guy to deal them a real wound was Zach Randolph probably in 2011, but it seems like they've figured the Grizzlies
really?
Out.
You don't think it was Ray Allen last year?
That was one shot. It's a little bit different.
That was one shot that saved their season. They took the championship away from them.
It was.
There's no way around this.
There is no way around this. That shot is so funny to me because we always say, if Ray Allen misses one shot, then this and that is true of how we're talking about Miami. And I've always thought about that scenario as, it's more impressive that Bosch got a rebound than Ray Allen hitting a wide open court. It's like, everybody thought that shot was going in once he shot it.
It's still the greatest shot I've ever seen. I think it's the greatest shot in NBA history.
There's a fantastic argument for it.
I really do.
Going backwards, knowing exactly where to set his feet.
Yeah, with the context of everything around it, the fallout if that shot, if they lose that game.
For the ball.
Yeah.
The key.
There's just so much going on there. So many subplots. So many possible spinoffs of what happens. Like it's the greatest shot in NBA history.
Pure swish at the end of it.
Yeah. And then the get these mother effing ropes off the court.
It was like a movie.
It is. It was scripted. Oh,
who wins if those two teams face each other another time? Who wins that series? I gotta lean Spurs a little bit. I gotta say.
I'll go Heat.
You go Heat.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just LeBron looked so vulnerable in that series with the weird, we're gonna back off you 10 feet. Maybe he'll figure it out. I don't know. I just emotionally swayed by the recent moments, prisoner of the moment with how well the Spurs are playing. I'd lean Spurs, but I retain the right to change my mind in the future.
Sure, I guess so.
Why did I say it in a movie voice?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, anybody can change their mind.
In a world where the Spurs are playing the Heat.
That's been one thing where they're just being a Timberwolves fan right now, or being someone that covers the Wolves, Steve McPherson and I have talked about this a little bit. It can be frustrating because people are like, oh, well, you know, I hate rooting for this team, and just stop rooting for them.
You can do that.
I can magically just like snap my fingers. I'm a Clippers fan now. I love the Clippers.
Yeah,
pick whatever team you want.
I liked the Knicks growing up, and then during the Isaiah Thomas era, I realized to myself, "You're not from New York. You can do whatever you want." You liked Ewing a lot. He doesn't play there anymore. Yeah, you know, just you're going to school here in the Bay Area. Just start following this awful Warriors team with Derek Fisher hitting all the clutch shots, you know, when needed.
You're a huge Colgate fan, so you hopped on the O'Donnell Foyle bandwagon.
Exactly. Showed my judgment. Like, oh, this Knicks thing isn't going anywhere. I think I'm gonna take up with the early to mid 2000 Warriors. That's the way to go.
Sounds like a plan for success. Do we have anything else to talk about?
I'm sure we did, but we can always get to it in the future. We've been talking for a while. I'm getting fatigued.
Tired?
I need Spurs rest. You know,
Popovich would not have let you talk this long.
He would not have, you know, at least not without the proper libations to get me through it.
If he was coaching these podcasts that you and I do, how much do you think gets through? How much of a show? We usually go about an hour. How much of that show does he actually allow?
He'd call a lot of timeouts.
Six minutes?
He'd call a lot of timeouts, maybe 6 minutes. I would love to be coached by Popovich. So I have been coached by Popovich when I've asked him questions, and he's reframed some of what I should be asking and what was wrong with it. I remember during All-Star weekend, I asked him some strategy question. Can't even remember what it was. They were doing something different on defense, and he just looked at me and he said, "Come on, it's All-Star weekend. We're having a good, relaxing time. You're going to ask me a question about basketball? Come on." I'm thinking, well, yeah, you're the coach of the West this year. Like, okay.
I think he'd actually cut out all of our basketball talk and he would just have the tangents, because that'd be the only part he respects.
I've asked him, I once asked him what he calls it when they rest all their starters. Is there a term for it? And he said, "Yeah, I don't. No, you know, we don't have one. You know, you can put anything there. Yeah, I just make up a term. I don't give a S. You know, like, I don't give an S. Just make up a term. And when people ask me about it, I'll go, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. That's it." He was trying to get me to join in on a conspiracy of lying about the semantics of what he called it.
Well, so. they're here next week, so maybe I'll ask him the same question. We can kind of get this thing going.
Yeah, ask him the same question. See what he sees. See how he responds. I know Danny LaRue of Real GM called it, God, did he call it a faux fit? There was some term he came up with. Come up with your best term, your best pun, Zach. And Popovich, I swear, will bless you with it. And you can just say that he said it, and it will become the way we describe this.
I think maybe I will just try to like throw a pun his way and see how he reacts. What if he's a huge pun fan?
He might be.
Yeah.
He might be a huge big pun fan.
Oh, big pun hit you with a big gun.
I mean, if George Karl likes Gucci Mane, I can never pronounce it correctly. I sound like I'm talking about the Ming Dynasty.
I don't know. Don't make jokes about people not having him as their favorite rapper, because Twitter does not accept that.
Oh, my bad. I'm sorry about that. You know what's sad is that I tweeted out a picture of NBA Tonight at maybe 1 a.m. or whatever it was when the sound was down, and I saw that George Karl was talking about his favorite rappers. That got shared more than anything I've ever done or contributed to humanity.
Does that make you feel good as a writer?
No, not at all. Me taking a picture of NBA Tonight of George Karl talking rappers in an April Fool's prank, like that got disseminated more than anything else. Any of my precious thoughts, any of my incisive commentary, that reigned over it all. Nah, it doesn't make me feel good, not at all.
Well, I can't think of a better note to go out on than you not feeling good after exposing your cape of lies. Thursday nights on TNT. Ethan, we can follow you on Twitter, at Sherwood Strauss, Warriors World, True Hoop TV, all that stuff. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.